Welcome to another episode of Cambria Private Capital Ignite and Scale, where we bring insights from the forefront of entrepreneurship and investments. Today, we're excited to welcome Peter Cowley, also known as the Invested Investor. Peter's journey through entrepreneurship and investment has led him to not only build and sell his own businesses, but also to guide and mentor the next generation of entrepreneurs. An angel investor with a wealth of experience, Peter has a keen eye for potential and a deep understanding of the startup ecosystem. His contributions to the industry have been well recognized with numerous awards, and he's here today to share his wisdom with us. Peter, thank you for joining us. Very good. I mean, if we just delve into some of the questions I've got for you, and I'm sure we'll get to know your background as we do that, but just from your vast experience as an angel investor, what are the key qualities you look for in startups and founders before you decide to invest?
First of all, I invest in founders who have startups, what I call people with a plan, rather than plan with people, because it's the people that are going to grow it and they're going to cause it to fail or not fail, depending on, you know, all kinds of parameters, some within their control and some outside their control. So obviously the founders need to be the right sort of character. They need to have the right sort of knowledge and experience of what they're doing. They need to have an idea. They need to be honest with themselves and with others. They need to be coachable. That means effectively they're going to listen to somebody somewhere, you know, the market, the you know, their staff or whatever. So it comes down to them being a certain. They need to be. It's difficult for new angels to work this out, and that's why I always recommend angels follow other angels in the early deals. If you're not going to use crowdfunding, of course, well, you don't. Doesn't really matter in that situation. You've got to work out the characters of the founders, and a super charismatic founder isn't necessarily going to be good at scaling a business.
Yeah. I mean, you've got vast experience, Peter, and at the time that we last spoke, I think you said you've had 76 plus investments, 21 failures and 20 positive exits. I mean, you've got a lot more insight than most in terms of common pitfalls, but when you take that collective experience, what do you think founders should avoid when seeking investment in terms of from their point of view? Who are the right investors for them? And how's that marriage made in heaven?
Yeah, it's not initially avoiding the pitfalls. It's choosing the right investors. So the first thing by far to do is to select them, not all of them. I mean, if you on the first round, you might, if you're going the angel route as opposed to the VC route, you'd probably have a group of between 5 and 15 angels. If you're going the crowdfunding route, you might have hundreds of but they're not angels then, they're just early stage investors. So choose them and do that by research. And over the years, although my parameters for investing, and I've stopped investing now, have all been on the website, people have still not done enough research, and they've sent me things which are so wildly outside, or even not even wildly, but just outside my criteria, then it's rather annoying. They've wasted their time, and of course they're wasting my time unless I just use a delete button. Anyway, so particularly if you want somebody who's going to help more on the journey because they've got specific skills, whether it's if in hospitality it's somebody who knows about hospitality, which I certainly don't accept as a consumer of it, but if you want somebody who knows about semiconductors, say, or nowadays AI, then you could choose a specific investor there. So do the research. And then another big one, this is a research on which investors. The other big one is that when you put together the plan, do enough research on that so that the assumptions you're going to be making in that plan, because they're obviously assumptions, unless you've got a business that's already running, and at that point, an angel like me probably isn't very interested in it because we invest generally at a much earlier stage where there's, you know, there might be a minimum viable product, but there might just be a pitch deck even. Do research the assumptions about acquisition cost of customers and lifetime value as just one example.
And how do you approach the mentorship aspect of your investments? I think you said sometimes you're the right person, sometimes you might not be within a group of angel investors. So How do you determine that? And what advice do you give to founders on leveraging their relationship with investors?
Well, first of all, before you even have the mentoring, there's huge amounts of resources out there on the internet. I've written a couple of books, but there's many other books. There's lectures, there's podcasts. There's many things that you can get information from which isn't necessarily interacting with a person like me. And then the mentorship can be in several forms depending on the relationship. So you've got the sort of informal mentorship where you might come up to somebody who's at a conference or just been on stage and just spend a few minutes with them, just having a chat about the business and maybe getting one or two getting some ideas about that. Then you've got official mentorship schemes or coaching schemes where there might be money's changing hands, hopefully not too often, although there are plenty of course coaches out there. And then you've got where the relationship's already been formed, either because the investor is keen on investing and wants to help you find others, or post consummation of the investment where the money's been transferred, where you've got an official arrangement, and then the mentor might be one of the shareholders or might even be on the board. And then at that point you've got direct access, maybe with a little bit of conflict there because they're on the board and they're representing the other investor, but then you will get much more attention there. So that's on the side of finding the ones. Once you've got a mentor, obviously you've got to be honest with them, and it's the same we have with anybody you've got a relationship with. You've got to be honest about it and do communicate regularly. If they're on the board, they're getting board packs, but if you take it all the way down to other shareholders where you want information from, just keep them up to date. Otherwise, they won't be able to help in the way that you want.
And is that monthly communications, would you say, is a minimum?
No, monthly. Well, if you're taking board members, absolutely monthly, or even fortnightly, or even weekly, or even daily, if things are either going horribly wrong or horribly well. If a company's getting close to running out of cash, then it's probably daily or at least twice a week you need to talk to the board. But if you're talking to the shareholders themselves, monthly generally is too often, because people won't read it if you send it every month, unless it's very short, but it's certainly every 3 months. So when I was leading rounds, I would always put into the legals of the document, in the legals, that the company would give a shareholder update to all shareholders once every quarter. So annually is far too infrequent. Monthly is, I believe, too frequent.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And in your view, how has the landscape for startups and angel investing changed in recent years? And what trends do you see emerging in the future?
Well, we all know, where are we now, the beginning of 2024, that there's a lot of surprisingly large amount of capital available during the COVID times in 2020 and some of 2021, or most of 21 actually. And then at the beginning of 22, which was 2 years ago now, it suddenly started to dry up. In a big way, starting over in California and gradually spreading around the world. So nowadays, getting hold of capital is much less easy. And because it's effectively turned from a seller's market where people were selling equity to a buyer's market where they're buying cash, i.e. getting cash, the dynamics have changed a lot. So raising capital for a startup is much more difficult. Less so at the angel level. There's probably, apart from the interest rates going up and therefore tax incentivized investing here in the UK has reduced, there is still quite a lot of angel investment, nothing like it was in 2019, 2018, etc. But the VCs had raised a lot of money before COVID, and they still got money they need to deploy, but they're struggling to raise again unless they've had great success. So it's later rounds are getting more and more difficult to raise the money. And if it's difficult to raise the money, you end up with a combination of a valuation lower than you'd hope, or some other terms and conditions being enforced on you. Not by angels. We almost always in the UK buy ordinary shares, which are the same as the founders have got. So yeah, it's changed. The capital availability has changed a lot. And also M&As have changed. There aren't so many sales of businesses. So the recycling of cash for angels isn't happening. The VCs are struggling to justify how good they are there for raising more money. That the general feeling is that M&A will start again towards the end of this year, early next year. And then if you take the trends, of course, we've all got, we've seen the hype all over the place. We've seen the NFT hype come and go. We've got crypto, which, you know, we all got our own views on it. My view has always been very negative about that. We've got blockchain, which again, I had negative views, but I do see blockchain being useful in certain circumstances. And now we've got the AI hype, you know, and there's huge amounts of hype there. And there's no doubt AI is going to be revolutionary in the way we live our lives, personal lives, business lives, etc. But there's a lot of cash going in, which won't necessarily ever come out again into that sector. And then there's the base stuff, which is going on as it always will do. This, you know, I don't do any B2C, so I don't do any consumer stuff, but there's still brands being built, whether they're, you know, hospitality brands or they're clothing brands, etc. Platforms, there's probably less platforms needed nowadays than there were 10, 15, even 5 years ago. A lot of the platforms have now been formed and are settling down. So, yeah, there are always trends, but the biggest problem at the moment is lack of availability of capital.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something that we're seeing and observing as well. What strategies would you recommend founders to utilise to effectively scale up their startups? And, you know, once they've scaled up, there's a sustainable growth trajectory that they need to deliver as well if they're going to attract other forms of capital. How have you, in terms of some of your success stories, what are the strategies that you've helped deploy in those businesses to achieve that scale?
Yeah, that's a really big question, of course, because first of all, scaling a business isn't necessarily something I need to go all the way through as an angel investor. I'm looking for a return of a number of times my capital that I put in, you know, 10, we talk about 10 times, but commonly it's 3 or 4 times in a reasonable time frame, you know, perhaps 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. And that gives me good internal rate of return, you know, annual return of 20 or 25%. But companies can sell quite easily without really scaling their sales team, say, or scaling the sales. I've got one example, great example, business that was sold to Apple, which, as far as I'm aware, and I wasn't on the board, there was never an invoice ever raised. It just built up intellectual property and built up a good team. And then Apple, it's on my website, actually, which company it was, Apple came along and bought it. So it doesn't, scaling for me as an angel doesn't necessarily mean turning into a company of 200 people that's turning over, you know, £20 million or whatever. But scaling startups is really, really, really tough. You know, by scale, there's one definition of scaling, which I think is 20% growth per year or something from a fairly low base. But properly scaling companies really are talking about having hundreds of staff over after, you know, 7, 8, 9 years. And to do that usually needs a lot of luck, early product market fit or a lot of capital. There's an example here in Cambridge, Abcam, which has just been sold actually in the States for $5.2 billion. And it only took a few hundred thousand pounds worth of cash at the beginning, because it found product market fit, i.e. the capital required for scaling was coming from customers, not investors, to get it to the point where it floated. And of course, it will have sold shares since then, but it's still, you know, the original founder had a good proportion of the shares even after 20 odd years when it sold for $5 billion. Pushing hard for scaling is what investors want. It isn't necessarily what's good for the business, because if you push hard for scaling and continually make losses, which you will do, you cannot, really difficult to make good profits and scale rapidly. It does happen. I remember Lotus 1-2-3, which was the forerunner to Excel effectively. The founder managed, he was on stage and he set out and set himself a target of $1 million of sales in the first year. This would be in the 80s. And did $63 million that year. And this was software, although it was packaged up and had floppy disks and things, there was a cost to manufacture, but it was a relatively high gross margin. That's very unlikely, so you're going to need lots of capital. And the issue is, of course, is if you're scaling hard, making losses, and something falters, it might be macroeconomic, like COVID, if you're in hospitality or whatever, then if the investors lose interest, it's really difficult to even recover from that, never mind continue scaling. So yes, a sustainable growth trajectory, everybody would want that, of course, but one can easily, as is shown, one can easily overscale, if that's the right term, to grow rapidly and actually fold because of that. And that's excluding the concept of overtrading, where you haven't got enough cash to actually build a business.
Yeah. What's the most memorable investment that you've made, and what were the key learnings? It could be a positive or a negative investment through your tenure. Well, what was the biggest?
Very early days, just on the negative, very briefly, I invested in a company. This was when I was really just learning, about 3 years into my journey. And within, I think it was 5 months, they'd gone bust. I learned a lot from that one. They'd already had several rounds of angel investing. I learned various things, but to lose a business within 5 months showed very poor due diligence on my part. But I learned a lot that time. That is on my website. But the one of the ones that worked really well was a company called James & James, where I joined the company when it was a technology company, and it actually gradually morphed into a service company, which I don't normally invest in. And then we had a private equity buyout of me and some liquidity for the two founders after about 6 years. And then I made 100 times more than 100 times my investment. So there was obviously a very good return there, and that offset some of the losses, but it also was the journey and helping them on that journey. And I got married again last year, and one of the founders was at the wedding, for instance. So they'd become friends, but I'm sure I learned from it because it was quite rapid growth, but I'm sure they did as well. My very first angel investment, that was put a bit of money in, got an 18 times return after 2.5 years. Not a great deal of money went in, so it didn't make a great deal coming out. But I learned a huge amount about what it was to be an angel investor and help, not run my own business, because I've run setups, as you said earlier, many businesses, to actually be part of somebody else's business. There's another one which this isn't on the web, it's on the website, the result, but you can't tell which one it was. They had an insolvency practitioner on every single board call towards the end, and it still had a positive exit.
Wow, okay.
You can imagine I learned a lot about that.
Yes.
we're a tech business. We because we're running out of cash and investors have sort of lost interest, it became a service business and doing work for other companies using the same technology, of course, and then sold itself to one of the customers. So.
Excellent. And lastly, for founders, founders that are listening who are preparing to pitch to investors, what would be your top tips for a successful pitch?
there is a chapter in my book on that, Investor. Do your research on what the pitch. Yeah, so you've read it. I think you've read it twice, haven't you, by the sound of it, from what you said to me a few months ago. So that just gives you an overview of what I think should be in a pitch deck. So the pitch deck in the old days when I started 15 years ago, it was a business plan and it was 40, 50, 60, 70 pages. That, thank goodness, has disappeared. And now it's a 12, 15 page PowerPoint deck with, of course, behind it, a spreadsheet with all the assumptions and growth. Because if we're going to give you some money, you've got to say how you're going to spend that money. You'll be wrong, guaranteed to be wrong. You won't be able to recruit fast enough, and you certainly won't get sales as fast as you think you're going to. Another point about the pitch deck, there should be two versions of it. There should be a version which you use when you're presenting yourself, either by Zoom or by on stage or something, and there should be another version which has got much more detail in that you send out to people. The version that you use on stage or on Zoom or whatever should have very few words in it, because otherwise you'll find the audience reading the words and not listening to you. So that's a very important point, two versions of the same deck. And then, of course, as I said earlier on, the assumptions in the numbers behind it need carefully thinking through, because we will challenge any of that. And please don't say we're going to win 0.1% of the global mobile phone market or something, because we would just laugh and wouldn't even ask, you know, if you send that through to me on an email, I would laugh. And then the other final point about that is selecting your targets. So again, back to what I said earlier on, don't waste your or their time picking on the wrong people. Do spend time in looking at how these people can help. Of course, it may be through an angel group if you're going the angel route, in which case, yeah, you won't know who the targets are, but you'll know the general ethos and investment philosophy of the group, you know, whether it's possibly retail or it's business to business, which is a bit more common in angel investing. So those are the tips.
Very good. And as a last note, Peter, in terms of budding angel investors, founders, advisors, the wealth of knowledge on your website, can you direct them towards that? Maybe talk a little bit about the various books you've written and maybe enlighten us on any plans you have for the future.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so about probably 7 or 8 years ago, I thought I'm doing a lot of one-to-one mentoring. I'm doing a bit of lecturing to audiences of 15, 20, 25. But I just felt I would like to increase the size of my audience. So I went in with my son and we formed a company called the Investor Investor. We did about 80 podcasts, which are all on the Investor Investor website. And we wrote a couple of books or authored a couple of books because in both cases, there was the wordsmith, Kate Kirk. And the first one, Invest Investor, is aimed at angels, but it's mostly read by entrepreneurs to find out what it's like to raise capital, etc. And Founder to Founder was, we interviewed 100 people that we'd got to know through the podcast and got their views about hiring and firing and raising and all the rest of it. And then my third book, which is due out on April the 17th, you can pre-order it already, it's called Public Success, Private Grief, where it's basically a memoir about my life, how I got to where I've got to, and how I've coped with a number of tragedies, really quite terrible tragedies in my life. I've got late-stage cancer, but I'm still trucking on helping others, as you can see with this podcast we're doing together here, Mike. The son that co-founded the Investor Investor tragically died about 18 months ago, and I'd also lost a son about 15 years ago. So having lost two children, advanced cancer and other things in my life, I just felt that I in some way can hopefully inspire others who are going through their own tragedies even if it's just a grandparent with cancer, they might learn from the way I coped with it, how to help cope themselves and how to help their friend or family member cope. So that's called the website, which I think you'll hopefully put in the show notes, is PS-PG, publicsuccessprivategrief.com.
Yeah, no, Peter, you've certainly inspired me as we set up the fund, and I've really enjoyed going through your materials and your books and really look forward to the launch of the third book as well, because there's such a wealth of experience and knowledge that's helped me. So thank you for that as well.
You're welcome, Mike. Yeah.
Peter, really appreciate your time today and your valuable insights. And we'll be sure to add all those information to the show notes as well. If any listeners want to get in touch or read and be inspired by your work. Thank you again.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you very much indeed.
If you want to listen to more episodes of the podcast, we're on all good audio platforms. Our website is also www.cambriaprivatecapital.com. And you can also find myself on LinkedIn and Twitter, where we publish our weekly blogs as well. Please do get in touch if you want more information.